Welcome, viewers and listeners, to CHP Talks. I'm here today with another exciting guest, someone I really appreciate, and that's Mr. Larry Worthen. Welcome to the show, Larry.
My pleasure to be here, Rod. Thanks for asking me.
And just to introduce you to our folks, Larry Worthen is a graduate of Dalhousie Law School in 1981. He had a career in management in the not-for-profit sector and in the Nova Scotia Department of Justice. He's in Nova Scotia. And his interest in human rights legislation led him to participate in the drafting of the province's respectful workplace policy and to develop the mandatory training program for all provincial government employees. He's a trained facilitator, an adult educator, and a mediator. Larry is married to Dr. Linda Gagnon and resides in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. He is an ordained deacon in the Catholic Church. And in May of 2013, he graduated from the Atlantic School of Theology with his MA in Theology and Religious Studies. His thesis outlines the role of proclamation in the new evangelization. Larry and Linda have two children, six grandsons, and two granddaughters. He is the executive director of the Christian Medical and Dental Association of Canada. So once again, it's really a pleasure to have you with us today, Larry. And we have some important topics to cover. And part of it involves conscience, something that we want to be sure that we maintain in our society. So first of all, tell us a little bit about the Christian Medical and Dental Association of Canada.
Well, we're an association of about 1,500 Christian doctors and dentists across Canada. And our goal is to help doctors and dentists integrate the Christian faith with the practice. And so we do a number of things, like we publish our Focus magazine three times a year. We have a national conference every year. We have retreats for students, both in the eastern part of Canada and the western part of Canada. We have chaplains, part-time chaplains, in 14 different medical and dental schools across Canada. So essentially, we're there to help preserve and promote the Christian faith in the study and practice of medicine and dentistry.
Yeah, wonderful. And how long has CMDA been around?
We started in 1970, so okay. We've been around 52 years now.
Yeah, so yeah. And you've obviously grown and are reaching into a lot of areas in the area of supporting doctors with their faith. And how long have you been directly involved with CMDA?
I was fortunate enough to be called to this vocation in 2012.
Okay.
So it's just over 10 years.
Wonderful. I was on your website this morning. Let me just see if I can find that location here. And I was really pleased. I saw that your mission is CMDA Canada exists to engage, encourage, and equip Christian doctors and dentists to glorify God by integrating faith in practice. That's wonderful. And then the vision is healing and hope through honoring Christ in healthcare. But beyond that, you have a preamble. And it says it was first articulated by Dr. Thomas Sydenham, the father of modern medicine, who lived from 1624 to 1689. So
yes.
That's very interesting. This quote is fantastic. If you don't mind, I'm just going to read it.
Sure.
It becomes every person who purposes to give himself to the care of others seriously to consider the four following things. First, that he must one day give an account to the Supreme Judge for all the lives entrusted to his care. Second, that all his skill and knowledge and energy, as they have been given to him by God, so they should be exercised for his glory and the good of mankind and not for mere gain or ambition. Third, and not more beautifully than truly, let him reflect that he has undertaken the care of no mean creature. For in order that he may estimate the value and the greatness of the human race, the only begotten Son of God became himself a man and thus ennobled it with his divine dignity, and far more than this, died to redeem it. And fourth, that the doctor, being himself a mortal being, should be diligent and tender in relieving his suffering patients, inasmuch as he himself must one day be alike sufferer. I thought that was pretty fantastic. And so
Yeah.
the roots of your organization go back a long ways.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, the history of the connection between Christianity and medicine, especially in Canada, is huge, you know. We toured a museum a couple of weeks ago. We had a board meeting in Montreal. We toured a museum and we found out about the roots of healthcare in Montreal, and very much entwined with the Christian faith.
Yeah.
Well, so, yeah.
We're finding, and our party, the Christian Heritage Party, our development director has been digging into a lot of the ways that Christianity has shaped our culture. In law, and you're a lawyer, so you would understand that the underpinnings of our civilization, really Western civilization, are from God and through His Word. But we won't go too far in that direction because we want to talk about some of the things you've been involved with recently. And we know that Kelly Block, MP Kelly Block, recently had a bill in support of conscience legislation for doctors. And maybe you could launch us in that topic and just talk about her bill. We know, unfortunately, it failed because some people in Ottawa who are elected to represent the people think it's more important to represent their party and to hang together even with bad legislation. But anyway, tell us about Kelly Block's bill and why you think it couldn't make it past Parliament.
Well, uh, 99% of this is perception. We were involved in Parliament Hill in 2015 after the Carter decision and when legislation was being considered. And I made a presentation along with Cardinal Collins of Toronto to a joint committee looking at MAID. And we were there arguing the importance of conscience protection for individuals and for facilities. If one perceives that euthanasia is a panacea, a wonderful discovery that's occurred now in the 21st century in the modern age that has totally revolutionized healthcare and is a positive thing for patients, then anybody who would disagree with that then is kind of disenfranchised. And we found even at that, even in those first meetings, there were politicians who really did not want to extend any kind of conscience protection with reference to MAID.
Yeah.
And of course they said, well, it's a provincial responsibility. But the way Kelly's bill had set it up was that it would be would create a criminal offense to force anyone to participate, and participate was defined in the broadest possible terms, either directly or indirectly.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, because we knew the positions of the Liberal Party and the NDP party and the Bloc Québécois, there was virtually no way for this legislation to pass, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
The problem that we have is that we have, we have politicians that are directly influenced by media narratives. To give an example of this, we have done a lot of lobbying in the province of Ontario, particularly with the Doug Ford government. And we had a proposed legislation that we even had a backbencher in their party that was prepared to bring it forward. We had proposed legislation, and we tested that with a national public opinion survey that was done by an extremely credible and reputable public opinion firm. And that survey told us that when we surveyed Ontarians, 85% were in favor of the passage of the legislation.
The conscience legislation
that we had proposed for Ontario.
Right.
85% of people polled. Of that number, 41% said they're more likely to vote for a party that brought it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when my government relations consultant saw that, they couldn't believe it. They'd never seen anything supported to that extent. But we went to MPPs and even members of cabinet. And here's what they said. They said, the whole caucus agrees with you. The whole caucus agrees that the majority of people in Ontario support this legislation. But if we bring forward this legislation, then the opponents, Dying with Dignity and people like that, will say that our party is trying to restrict access to MAID.
Yeah.
The media will pick up that message and they will accuse us of it. And the general public will think that we're trying to restrict access to MAID. So I think that right there is a story that in a nutshell explains exactly where we're at in Canada.
And it is a
horrific situation for a democracy to be in, because what it says is that media narratives and the narratives of a small group of special interest advocates are driving the whole bus in Canada. And even to the point where, 85%, and there were no tricks in our poll. We listed off what was going to win the legislation.
Yeah.
And 85% of the poll people said. So I think that what's happening in this country is that there's just a horrific culture of fear. People are afraid to speak out. Politicians are afraid to do what's right. And unlike other countries, like the United States, Great Britain, most countries, you can have two opinions on something and you can have that discussion. In Canada, it just seems to me that we're very much trying to create one voice, one message, and anyone who deviates from that message is not even heard or listened to.
Yeah. Well, the ability of media to manipulate public opinion, and especially when it goes along with government. Of course, they could go against government if they wanted and have a similar effect. But because they're somewhat dependent on government, they get money from government. They need licenses to operate and that kind of thing. And in many cases, there is advertising revenue that may support a particular point of view. So it is quite troubling, because conscience, down to the core issue here, if we have a nation where one cannot follow the dictates of one's own conscience, we are on the verge of tyranny. Because, I know some people object to drawing allusions to or comparisons with the Nazi regime, but both in Nazism and in Stalinism or communism, the individual is forced, if they want to live, if they want to have a job, if they want to eat, they're forced to do things that they don't want to do, that they don't agree with, that violate their conscience. And if they resist, then they're swallowed up, chewed up by the machine. And that is, so many people do violate their own consciences in order to survive. And in so doing, we are demeaning the nature of society. We're demeaning human beings who we have a God-given conscience, and that conscience is to protect innocent human life. So when a doctor, again, just to underline the point, a doctor says, no, I cannot in good conscience participate in the taking of an innocent human life. No, I cannot even direct someone to someone else who will do it, because that's also participating. That's the gist of the proposed legislation is to allow a doctor to say, no, based on my inner convictions, I cannot participate. It's amazing that in our society that people would say, politicians would say, no, we don't want to acknowledge the value of your conscience. In fact, we will override your conscience. And if you don't want to participate, you're just out of the loop. You cannot be a doctor in our country. And that's a terrible thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you and I could have conversations about, you know, I did a presentation at my church back before the election. I talked about dissolving freedoms was the title of the talk, dissolving freedoms. And there are a number of troubling developments in recent legislation where a whole range of freedoms are being eroded. But you see, conscience, you and I understand what conscience is. It's really a connection. It's not arbitrary. It's a connection to the divine spark that is in every human person. It comes from God. The word conscience, though, for the secularist, seems to be arbitrary, based on the feeling. And so what we found was that even the word conscience is misunderstood and can be distorted. And so what we're doing now is we're trying to point out the vulnerability of patients so that people can see that the doctor's conscience is not selfish. The doctor's conscience is directed towards protecting the vulnerable.
Yes.
And so we've shifted. I remember one of the MPP said to me, Larry, you've got to change the narrative. And I was like, I've got to change the narrative. I'm not in government.
No.
But that's the attitude. I've got to change. So we've decided to switch our narrative now to talking about the vulnerability of patients so that people understand that people coming in to look for MAID, their motivation might be they don't want to be a burden on others, or they might sense a loss of dignity, or they might be lonely and isolated. They might not be able to find meaning in their lives anymore. They might be frightened of pain in the future. These are all vulnerabilities that people have, and they need a doctor who's going to really be dedicated to saving their lives. Not, you know, the general public worries that we're going to be forcing the person or keeping them from access to MAID. That's not it. We just want to be there to be able to be in their corner and to advocate for them staying alive. We want to make sure that the healthcare system gives them all the attention and concern that they can get so that they can have every possible access to any service available so that they can stay alive. Yeah. But we know that the government saves money every time someone gets euthanized. So you need somebody with the courage of their convictions to be able to advocate for patients in that context.
Yeah.
So conscience, rather than being something that's going to harm the patient, conscience is something that could save the patient's life.
Yeah.
Because if we don't follow what Dr. Sydenham said, then we're not worried about facing judgment. And if we're only worried about protecting our own hides, then we're going to just go along. If a patient, the easiest thing in the world to do, if a patient comes in and says, I want to kill myself, the easiest thing in the world to do is to say, here's a referral for a MAID assessment.
Yeah. Yeah. But that violates that your internal mechanism that says, no, don't do this.
Right, right, right. And so doctors, I'm pretty sure you know that we lost a court case on this topic We went to the divisional court in Ontario, and then we went to the Ontario Court of Appeal. We lost the decision. And in the end, they said that, you know, there's no right to practice medicine. So if these doctors don't like these rules, they can just either not practice or go into sports medicine or some other, you know, go into research. So Christians will find this totally repulsive and repugnant.
Yeah.
And one message I would have for your listeners is, please don't discourage Christian students that you know who legitimately feel a call to medicine. Don't discourage them from going in, because we need people to be there to fight for the vulnerable, to fight for people with psychiatric illness, to fight for people who are disabled, to fight for people who have a life-threatening illness. By you being there, you may be the only thing that stands between them and euthanasia. And I believe, like, we have had some minor successes in dealing with the college in Ontario through our lobbying, through our dialogue with them. And I would say that we need, more than ever, we need dedicated Christian young people to join the profession. So I don't want people to feel like they're going to have to give up their soul. But I have to say that it is so upsetting for a Christian doctor to have put all the plans in place for a patient, for them to live, and have the patient choose death. I don't want to sugarcoat the sorrow involved in that.
Yeah.
But for every one that you lose in that way, there are so many more that you can help.
Yeah.
My wife's a family doctor and often wondered about what impact she was having. But just in the gentle way and encouraging way, she would counsel women with an unwanted pregnancy. She was able to share with me that a number of those women had chosen to go on and keep their baby. So, you know, of course it's upsetting, of course it's concerning, but how do you measure the joy and the benefit of having a life saved through your, you know, intervention? Right. Again, not coercing people, simply helping them understand what their options are and what the alternatives are.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Bible talks about something called a seared conscience. That's a conscience, because I believe we're all born with a conscience. We do have a sense of right and wrong that may vary somewhat from culture to culture, but some of the basic things that are part of the Ten Commandments, don't lie, don't steal, don't kill, in most cultures around the world, whether Christian or not, people kind of understand that it's wrong to take innocent human life. It's wrong to be deceitful, and it's wrong to steal something that belongs to someone else. So we have a conscience. Everyone does, regardless of their background. But you can sear that conscience if you continue to do things. If you know it's wrong and you do it anyway, the next time it becomes that much easier. Well, we see it in people who become either a serial killer or a thief, if they try to make their living by stealing from people. Maybe the first time they knew it was wrong, but the second time it was a little bit easier, and they can end up where it appears to us that they don't have a conscience, but they have a seared conscience, one that is not functioning. And it's a bad case to be in a society when many people, whether they're doctors, lawyers, or any other profession, if they have a seared conscience and they're unable to distinguish between good and evil, between right and wrong, so then our nation will have lost its moorings. So,
yeah, just to comment on that, Rod, because I have encountered some people who are in that category. One thing that might comfort your listeners is that the number of people involved in assessing and providing MAID is a relatively small percentage of the overall medical profession. We estimate in Ontario that only about 1% of all Ontario doctors are involved in assessments or in providing. And they're actually having difficulty recruiting doctors to do this work. The number of MAIT cases went up 32% in the last year, but the number of doctors has only increased marginally. And I think that we need to keep it in perspective and recognize that the vast majority of doctors, perhaps the only thing you could accuse them of is not being willing to speak up. Yeah. Because they're obviously not embracing this. The other thing is that I think what drives people is an overzealous desire to please patients and to help patients, and a wrong. It's kind of false compassion insofar as it's a false compassion that says that as a doctor, I've got to heal everything. I've got to stop all suffering. And that leads them to want to take this route. But there's lots of seared consciences around. Look at the politicians who voted for this legislation in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. They could have used the notwithstanding clause, yeah. And they didn't.
Yeah.
Look at the judges. All of the judges of the Supreme Court of Canada. Look at the advocates for this. And then because there's so few people doing it, we know of cases of doctors who've done in excess of 300 of these. Mm-hmm. Now, even the people who provide this service, the Association of Doctors who provide euthanasia, will say that there is a certain moral residue that they have to deal with. And because of that, they recommend that people not do too many of them. If someone had was in the Canadian military and had been involved in the deaths of 300 combatants, even in a just war, they would have that person seen by a psychologist to talk about PTSD. So this is the unhealthy situation we're in of relatively small numbers of doctors being involved in this process. And I can't imagine killing 300 patients.
Yeah, no. And if you go to abortion, it would be even more stark, the number of doctors involved in that and the number of babies that they have participated in killing in the womb. Now, I wanted to highlight, and you were involved in the legislation in Manitoba, and that's a few years ago. So Manitoba, yes, is, as far as I know, the only province in Canada that has implemented conscience legislation for doctors. Can you tell us a little bit how that came to pass?
Yes. Thanks be to God, in Manitoba, they had a health minister there who was also a lawyer, was from Steinbeck. Steinbeck, as you know, is a very Christian town. And he on his own wrote legislation that indicated that no one could be forced to participate in MAID. They left the word participate ambiguous, but in the committee level, he made it clear that it was the intention of the government that participation would include referral as well. And so that was very positive. Now, an interesting thing there is that he brought that legislation forward, and there was a lot of controversy, particularly around the religious hospitals out there and whether they would have to allow MAID on the premises. I heard about this. I went out and met with the minister. Our organization at that point, we were in a coalition of healthcare and conscience, and we did a church campaign there. We got something like 14,000 letters that were sent to the premier and to the minister of health and to the leader of the opposition. indicating that church people were not supportive of a requirement to participate in Made Against Conscience. We're okay at providing information. Information is a different story. But in order to, but to be actually one of the parties in the chain leading to MAID was more than we could handle. And so the legislation was passed there. Since that time, we've been trying to get similar legislation in other provinces. And we've had concerns. And again, you know, again, I just want to reinforce, it's because generally speaking, Christians are not a strong, they're not a strong politically motivated group. They don't make their voices heard. And the people who make their voices heard and have the ear of the media tend to be opposed to this sort of initiative.
Well, British Columbia, where I live, unfortunately has not taken this wonderful step that Manitoba has taken, but in fact, going so far the other way. I'm sure you know Angelina Ireland and the Delta Hospice Society, and they had a wonderful facility for palliative care, which we need more of. We need more places where people can go to get comfort care. But the dictatorial regime in British Columbia, not only, you know, they demanded that the Delta Hospice Society begin providing palliative care, in spite of there being a hospital about less than 10 minutes away that was doing these things. Those few beds, I think 13 or 14 beds they had, they demanded that they, and when they refused, well, the government stole their $8 million facility so that they could begin doing their evil work there. So anyway, so we thank God for people like you and people like Angelina Ireland and others who are standing up for both for the conscience rights of doctors and all Canadian citizens, and for the right of patients to receive proper palliative care in their final years, rather than being forced to choose to die because they don't see any option to survive. And you were going to mention, I'm hoping to speak with Margaret Cottle possibly next week, whenever we can set the time up, from No Options, No Choice. But you wanted to make a few comments regarding that program.
Well, one of the things we found very successful is connecting people who have our values with their politicians, and helping people have a very simple way of making their wishes and concerns known. Because I believe that there are many more people out there in Canada, many more people who support what we're saying. It's just we don't have a mechanism for them to get their ideas to the politicians. So this is a program called No Options, No Choice. It's completely bilingual. We have a website, nooptionsnochoice.com. We encourage all of your listeners to go there. When they arrive, there'll be an option for them to give their information and then write a letter to their MLA, MPP, member of the House of Assembly, member of the National Assembly in Quebec, and to express their concerns about the lack of options. And there are three different groups. And so on our web page, we have videos of three different patients. One who has a life-limiting illness, talks about the vulnerability of patients who have serious illness like that, and about the lack of access to palliative care. Another one has a mental health concern, a young man, he's only 21, who wanted to kill himself. And he talks about his attempt, and he also talks about the lack of resources that he encountered. for people with mental health concerns. And the third person is a person who has lived with a disability her whole life. And she talks about her groundbreaking work in opening things up for persons with disabilities and how there's a need for additional resources out there. All of these people can qualify for MAID. Persons with disabilities, people with psychiatric illness, you know, and none of these people have appropriate resources in the community to help them to live. So this is an opportunity for people who are concerned about this issue to go on the website, write a quick email to their MLA and get their needs and interests expressed. A couple of neat features of this is that we've got strong support from churches on this, Evangelical Fellowship of Canada, the Catholic Diocese in Ontario. And we have materials that are going to be available to everyone who signs up as to how churches can respond to the needs of people in these vulnerable groups, both within your congregations and in your communities. Because we can't just wait for government to act. Anytime we support people who are vulnerable like this, there's a good chance we can save their lives. And that's what Christianity is all about. So I think that that's a key component as well. And in addition to that, you know, we're going to do some national, we're going to go to Parliament Hill in February, and we're going to do some, get some petitions drawn up. And we can get people who sign up for this, we'll just send you an email and ask you to sign up for the petition as well. And then also, we even have a mechanism by computer for you to be able to contact your MLA by phone. So it's multiple ways that you can influence the debate. We're also hoping that people will, even though it's not really an anti-MAID campaign, we're hoping that the people realizing what's going on and the number of people who are dying unnecessarily, we're hoping that that will undermine the public's general faith in MAID, that will remove the halo from MAID, and that people will then realize how important it is to have a doctor who is prepared to fight for patients to stay alive.
Yeah, very good, very good. Larry, you've been super generous with your time. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. And we look forward to speaking with you again. And we really look forward to the success of your organization in this and other endeavors. You have a broad-based focus, but this is a very important part, this support for the conscience rights of doctors and other Canadian citizens, because there's a spillover when conscience is protected. It protects a lot of other wonderful aspects of our Western democracy. So folks, you can learn more about Larry and the Christian Medical and Dental Association of Canada at cmdacanada.org. Larry, thank you for joining us. Any final words for the folks?
No, just to give you the website for the No Options, No Choice, it's nooptionsnochoice.com. And Rod, I want to thank you for your kind invitation, and especially ask your listeners to pray for us. Pray for Christian doctors. If you have a Christian doctor, tell them about us. Get them to join the family. But our prayers are the most important, because Christ is leading this organization, and Christ is with us. No matter how challenging things look in Canada, don't ever doubt the presence of Christ in our midst.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you very much. God bless you. God bless your work. And we look forward to speaking with you again today.
Thanks, Rod.
Thanks. Bye-bye.